And on the line now, I have Fintan O'Leary, our solicitor. Hello, Fintan. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Now, our first one is, my parents bought a house a couple of years ago and put it in my name. I'm not living there, and I was wondering, is it possible to get my name taken off it, as it's, all it's doing is causing me grief. Is this the norm, or does it happen a lot?
I wouldn't say it's the norm, but a number of people tried when they got into a situation of negative equity a number of years ago now, where they saw that things weren't going well. They didn't want the banks coming after them to take property off them. So what some people try to do is they try to get the property out of their own name and maybe into a family member's name, so that if the bank looked for an order for sale on the property, they'd be in a position to say, well, it's no longer my property, it's somebody else's property.
Oh.
So it didn't happen to a large scale, but some people certainly did it. The difficulty is that if that person wants to get their name off it, there's two ways of getting rid of a property, you know. Well, actually, there's three, and there's only three. One is that you sell it, in which case there's stamp duty you pay for that 1% of the purchase price.
Mm-hmm.
The other way you do it is you give it as a gift to a person, and there may be tax payable on that. And the last way you can do it then is you can receive it as an inheritance. So that's the only three ways that somebody can get a property from their name to somebody else's name.
Okay.
So the listener's question is here, I don't think that she'd be given that as an inheritance because she's alive. So that leaves us with two situations. She can either gift it maybe back to her parents if they're out of the situation that they're in,
mm-hmm.
or they can give it back, they can sell it back. And if they sell it back, then there's 1% stamp duty on it.
Okay.
So that would be the only way they could do it. Now, 1% stamp duty is on the purchase price, and that's payable on the transaction. If they're to gift it back, they'd have to get specialist tax advice on it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there is a threshold between a parent and a child of €225,000 that they don't pay tax on.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure that threshold works the other way when it's going from child to parent.
Yeah.
So I'd say the cheapest way maybe to sell the property either to somebody else as a complete stranger or to sell it back to their parents. But either way, that'll incur stamp duty at 1% depending on the value of the property.
Mm-hmm. Okay, it sounds to me, I mean, I'm being flippant now, but I mean, is it possible that the child here that has it in their name, he could turn around and tell the parents to get out, that's my house, couldn't he?
Yeah, well, it depends if they're still there, but there is that risk. And we have to give people advice on that, no, because you just never know what's around the bend, and it's not so much their child that's the problem. It's if their child meets somebody else,
mm-hmm.
and that somebody else then says, oh, well, what are they doing sitting in that house? Or that's your house. Why don't you do this? Or why don't you? So that could normally be a partner or a spouse or somebody like that. People say the in-laws are fine, it's the outlaws are the problem.
Yeah, yeah. So you don't fall out. That's the main thing. Or
you
can't do it. I know I was being flippant, but it looks pretty serious underneath it, doesn't it? That it could happen very easily.
Oh, it could happen. A lot of people who, you know, as you know, we strongly recommend that people have make a will to tidy up their affairs, but a lot of people are very reluctant to hand over property when they're still alive to a child, even though it may make economic sense from a tax saving point of view. They're just reluctant to part because they don't know what's around the corner or mm-hmm. what may happen if that child meets somebody else who's difficult or truculent, or better still, they break up with their spouse. I had that situation once before. It was a house over in Santry, and it was a couple in the house, and the mother was in a nursing home, and then she got a barring order against her partner, who was the mother's, or the son. So if you like, we have a mother, a son, and a girlfriend in the house. The mother goes into the nursing home, and the son gets barred from the house, and the girlfriend's left living in the house.
Wow.
And the mother can't get back into the house, and the son can't get back, but the mother's not able to because she's in a nursing home, and the son is barred from the house, and they're all scratching their heads going,
how did this happen?
Where the girlfriend's in the house, and none of the family members are in the house, in the family home.
So,
I know you have to be careful, there's no doubt about it.
Caution. And at this stage, I'll say to people that people should go, no matter what they're doing, go and see your local solicitor, whatever solicitor you want. And usually the first consultation's free, but even if it's not, you're better off just go and see a solicitor before you do anything silly. Because I was being flippant there, but it could turn very serious very easily.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
Our second one now is about the purchasing and about guarantees and all that sort of thing. But for instance, someone bought a product, say, in Power City, they bought it for their grandparents, say. And when they got home, they found that the grandparent had already had one. So when they went back, they didn't open it up, they saw it was there, it's still in its original packaging. But they could only issue them with a credit note. But are they entitled to their money back, Fintan?
No, you're only really entitled to your money back, Noel, or for a full refund. If you're not satisfied with the quality of goods or services, you're just not necessarily entitled to a full refund.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of people, when they purchase an item, they'll go back and say that they're terribly sorry and they made a mistake. If it's defective, you can get a full refund. If there's something wrong with it, you can get a full refund. But if you buy a jacket at Christmas and you go home and you say, oh, this doesn't feel right to me, I'll go back and say, I don't like my jacket. This mm-hmm. You know, you're not entitled to a full refund in circumstances where you've changed your mind. So it sounds in that instance there where the lady bought something for her granny that she already had.
Okay.
And she went back to the shop and said, I've changed my mind.
Mm-hmm.
In those circumstances, the shop actually doesn't have to do anything. It was actually decent of them to give the person a credit note. They don't have to give them a credit note at all.
Mm-hmm.
But if anybody's not satisfied with the quality of goods or services, they need to return it to the person as soon as they can, because any delay that they have can indicate that they're accepting the goods and that they're happy with them.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's faulty, you need to get it back as soon as possible. They shouldn't try and repair it themselves or give it to anybody else to repair it, because if that's the case, then they're compromising their chances of getting a full refund.
And yeah, because
should always make sure that they have a proof of purchase if they can.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are under the misconception as well that if you buy something and if you've made a mistake yourself, that once it's no good to you, that you can bring it back. Now, about getting the refund, okay, I agree with that, but a lot of shops are very good where they will give you credit. Or they, for instance, if you buy something and it's the wrong size, fitting of some kind, and you've measured wrong and you bring it back, most of the shops are okay. They'd say, I understand, here, take the bigger one or the smaller one, whatever suits. Most of them are not really
most,
that.
Most will, but that's really as a goodwill gesture and good customer relations. A lot won't. And I mean, I think I remember telling you before, and all about the time people used to go in and buy something pre-Christmas in a size that they liked. We just pick a jumper, for example,
mm-hmm.
and then after Christmas they'd arrive back in and say, oh, I'm sorry, I bought this jumper for my brother and it doesn't fit. And they'd say, oh, that's no problem. And they'd issue them with maybe a credit note or a refund.
Mm-hmm.
And then the jumper would be put onto a peg, it would be hung back up, and instead of €40, it would be reduced to €20 in the sales. And the person would walk around the shop for a few minutes and walk back over and pick up the same jumper and walk back up to the shop assistant. Do you know something? I actually think I like that jumper myself. I might just buy it for myself instead of my brother.
Mm-hmm.
And they get it at half the price.
Yes, yeah.
So you have to be careful. Yeah. I don't want to mislead people. Know what I explained, that if something is faulty or it's defective, that they can get a full refund. Now, there's one or two exclusions to that. Like, I mean, if the shopkeeper told the purchaser about the defect before they bought the item, or if the goods were marked shop soiled,
mm-hmm.
or if you examined the item before you bought it, you ought to have seen the defect, or you bought it knowing that, you know, that it wasn't fit for what you wanted to do or something like that, then you won't get a full refund in those circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, if you broke or damaged the product yourself, you won't get it either.
Okay.
So just be aware of that in case somebody says, oh, well, I bought something that was faulty and I was entitled to a refund. It's only so long as you didn't realise it was faulty when you bought it.
Okay. So it's a goodwill of the shop, really. So you were lucky; they were lucky to get the credit note there, anyway. Okay, the last one sounds a bit complicated to me, but my parents are legally separated for more than 12 years. My dad and mum were both given a house each, and one house was shared 50-50 through the courts. Recently, my mum sold her house. Is my dad entitled to any of the money?
No. I mean, generally speaking, when people get separated, no, they sign a separation agreement. And within that agreement, they sign up to the fact that they're each waiving their succession rights in respect of what they may get from the other person when they die.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition to that, they normally have some deed in relation to the property at the moment, and they sign what's called a consent form, consenting to the sale of the property if needs be, but also waiving any interest that they have in that property. So if you have a husband and wife scenario, or a boyfriend, girlfriend, and they bought the property together and they separate, or they're going their separate ways, there's normally agreement that one person is going to take on the house. If that's not the case, well, then the house will be sold and the issue doesn't arise. But where one person takes on the house, the other person will sign, in the context of getting separated, that they're waiving any interests or entitlements or that they have in relation to that house.
Okay.
And in those circumstances, they can't come back 12 years later and look to rectify the situation. Now, if an agreement's not entered into, and this would have happened some years ago, that people are very much good on getting their separation agreement sorted out now, but I do have a situation whereby a couple got separated many years ago, they never filled in a separation agreement or signed a separation agreement. And what happens then is that the ex-spouse still has rights because they haven't signed off anything to say that they don't have rights. And in this particular circumstances, it is quite difficult because the lady died having not got formally separated. And then she died. And now her daughter is trying to deal with her affairs, but it means that the daughter's father has an entitlement to a share of the mother's estate.
Still, yeah.
Yeah, because they never did that separation agreement, so they never signed off on it. So in the question we asked there by the listener, I think, said that they had a house each, and was he entitled to any of the money? So if they signed a separation agreement, he wouldn't be entitled to any of the money. But if there was no separation agreement entered into, he might well be entitled to the money because he may still be a half-owner of that house.
Okay. Well, it looks like it was sorted out in the courts. But as I say, people should go to his list on any queries at all and have a chat with them. So you're in town there, just beside the Four Courts, Fintan, and quite busy in there. What's
just
the name?
Beside the Four Courts, no.
Yeah, what's the name of that place again? I keep forgetting it.
It's Smithfield.
Where you are?
Yeah, Smithfield, up in Seven, yeah.
Yeah. Now, the name of the actual area?
Oh, Lola Partners.
Yeah.
4 Iron Square.
Iron Square. That's right, Iron Square. Okay. I was just wondering about, I mean, you did a query for us about 2 weeks ago, and it's sort of similar to the last question there about separation and all like that. Is it very complicated if there's... Oh, let me think. The one we did 2 weeks ago was about physical abuse and that sort of thing. And if the male or either one, let's say, is because it could be male or female now who's causing physical abuse these days. If it's male or female, and the one has cause to leave to get out of a situation that's either unhealthy or mentally or physically, what happens to their rights because they've left and they decide maybe a couple of, after they've gotten their head sorted out and maybe 3 months down the road, they say, oh, here I am living in a bed sitting, I shouldn't be. What's their rights in that regard? Sort of thing.
It depends really on it's a very general question there, and all in relation to what's their rights. I mean, I do have people who, as you say, get their head together and they say, I now want to have access to my daughter or my son, and are entitled to go to court and make an application to the court to have access restored to them, even though they may have gone off. Off the radar, if you like, for a period of time. So, I mean, they still have rights to from an access point of view. Similarly, if somebody wants to get maintenance and this person has gone off the rails and next thing they're back on the rails and they're back working, the other partner can make an application to the court for maintenance to be paid. When you say their rights, I'm not sure whether you're dealing with their property rights. Again, we're kind of back to our original question there from the listener to whether or not they signed off. If you haven't signed off on the rights and entitlements that you have to a property, well, then you still have those rights and entitlements. Now, if you have signed off on them, well, then, you know, that's it. It's copper fastened. Because you should get legal advice you're signing off on anything like that. If you don't, you may be able to say, or maybe a suggestion that you didn't understand what you were doing.
Okay, well, I know I'm throwing these things out there. It's just coming into my head because I was thinking of the question 2 weeks ago. For instance, if you put it to the fourth one, how stringent are the laws now as opposed to the question I'm asking? I mean, in the old days, when I say the old days, not too long ago, maybe people still do it, I don't know. But a lot of people, when they get married, like the husband looks after all the bills more or less. I know it sounds chauvinistic, but that's the way it used to be. And maybe the husband's name was only on the deeds and stuff like that. So if a couple are together for 40 or 50 years or even 30 years and the husband's name was just... Does that mean it negates the wife out of the property altogether, or does she not get any compensation for... I was his wife for 30 years, it was just a matter of form. My name is not on the deeds, or what happens there legally?
Yeah, no, you're right, Noel, insofar as that was the traditional way of doing it was that the husband would only go on title and the wife wouldn't be on title. But the courts are very cognizant of that. And if an application was made, then there's a value placed on the fact that if the mother was a stay-at-home parent and minding the kids and raising the children, that afforded the husband the opportunity to go out and work and go out and make some money. But recognition would certainly be given to the female in those circumstances whereby she was a stay-at-home and she would be deemed to in the court side, to have contributed to the marriage, albeit not financially. Her contribution was the raising of the kids, and if she hadn't been out working, he would not have been in a position to go out working, because he'd have to stay at home and raise the kids. Yeah. So they look at it as a team effort and a team contribution. But every case will be judged on its own merits. I mean, I've one lady at the moment in the family law situation that the house is in her name, was always in her name. Mm-hmm. There's no children of the marriage, and they're only married for 3 years. She paid all of the mortgages and all of the charges in relation to the property. In those circumstances, he's unlikely to get a share of that house. Okay. But I have another lady coming to me who's married 26 years, and she hasn't worked, and he's at all times gone out and worked and provided for the family. But in those circumstances, she is going to be deemed to have contributed to the family over that period. She's likely to get some share in the property.
Yeah, the time frame there is huge though, isn't it, Fintan?
It's a lot down to that time frame. And the contribution, I mean, in fairness, if that person was only there for 3 years but paid the mortgage for those 3 years, in those circumstances, the court would deem, well, you know, I know that you're only there for a short time, but you did make a contribution to the house. So in those circumstances, mm-hmm. you're entitled to get something back out of the house or have some interest in the house. The big difficulty we're encountering now in relation to family law is the negative equity part, that people bought houses, say, up around Balbriggan or something for €300,000 that are now worth €180,000.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's where the difficulty arises, where the relationship is now gone. They can't afford to sell the house because they're minus €120,000.
Yeah.
They can't afford to keep the house because they were looking at two incomes in order to pay the mortgage. And they can't really afford to live together because one of them is going to go through the other one for a shortcut.
Yeah,
so yeah, it's a bit of a bind.
It's awful. Okay, listen, Fintan, and you have a website there as well, I'm sure, that people can look up.
Yep, www.lawlerpartners.ie.
Okay, Fintan, look forward to talking to you next week. A few things just come into my mind. I often think that some of the laws, I wondered how sympathetic the courts are. But thank you for answering them for me. And all our queries for our listeners, and we'll have some more for you again next week. But at the moment, thanks very much, Fintan.
Thanks indeed,
though. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks.
And that's Fintan Lawler and solicitor there. And he's here with me every Tuesday when he's not in court, but most times he's here with me on your queries. So if you have any, give us a call or an email, indeed, 867 1190 or email northsidetoday@nearfm.ie.